Kyle Tucker and Devin Williams have been traded. Is Nolan Arenado next? Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Monday, December 16th. Your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. Follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on the Twitter machine. And I want to get to some of the possible trades. Jesus Luzardo maybe going to the Cubs. I want to get to the Phillies' inability to make any trades because Dave Dombrowski overvalues his guys. But first, we got to talk about some of the biggest trades. We hinted at one of these on Friday, discussed it a little bit. It happened soon after the show went up. Kyle Tucker is on the move going from the Houston Astros to the Chicago Cubs. And the package in return, third baseman Isak Paredes, pitcher Hayden Wineski, and prospect Cam Smith. And you and I disagree on this package going back to Houston. Is it a quality or a quantity issue why you think that Houston didn't do as good as they could have done with this return package?
I think it's a quality issue. I'm more of a proven commodity guy than a prospect guy. And while Cam Smith is currently a top prospect, we have seen throughout the years of the hundreds of years of baseball how many top prospects don't pan out as expected. And that is certainly a possibility. Yes, they got Isak Paredes also, but at the same time, he has been wildly inconsistent throughout his career. His batted ball profile is fantastic for Minute Maid Park. It's not Minute Maid Park anymore, but the Icebox. And it's
oh yeah, it's like Daikon Park or something. Yeah. Which sounds like a Japanese vegetable, but it's really an air conditioning company. Yeah.
Right. And his batted ball profile works out perfectly for the Icebox, but they're trading Kyle Tucker, who is wildly consistently a top 10 batter in baseball, for Isak Paredes. And honestly, after I didn't really like the addition of Wisniewski in the trade either, but after looking into him a little bit more and getting a little more familiar with him, I do like that. He's also a hometown boy. He went to Cy Fair. He graduated from Cy Fair High School there in Houston. And so he's a local boy and going to be pitching for his hometown team. But I feel like that's not the best package that was available for Houston for a guy that is a top 10 hitter.
Yeah, I think there's a couple concerns you have with the deal. I know that there was some conversation about the Yankees were mad, right? They felt like Jim Crane just refused to deal with the Yankees, and so really they were just there to drive the price up. I think the issue here with Kyle Tucker is he really was a one-year guy. I mean, I don't remember if he's a Boris Klein or not, but it just feels like he's going to go to free agency because he's one of those guys that could get not to the same level of a Bryce Harper, but could get one of those massive kind of contracts where he makes $350 million in free agency because he is a top 10 guy and not a lot of teams, it feels like, are willing to go out and give a massive package for what they know is going to be a one-year rental in the wake of watching the Yankees give up a massive package for Juan Soto and then not be able to re-sign him. I do think that the timing of that probably played a small role simply because everybody watched what the Yankees did and how they gave up what looks to be an amazing dude in Michael King and a bunch of other pieces to get Juan Soto for a year, and then he walked in free agency. And all they're going to get is the compensatory pick. And I do think that Houston's in a situation where they thought, okay, getting something now is better than getting nothing but a compensatory pick if he walks. And I think they're in a situation now with Bregman where they're realizing that, where Bregman is going to walk, and all they're going to get is a comp pick. And it kind of feels like Houston just didn't want to deal with that again. They didn't want to watch a dude walk in free agency and get almost nothing, especially given the fact if they go over the luxury tax, that's not, it's like a fourth, it's like after the fourth round. It's not even after the first or second like they used to be. So I think that's part of it. I do like you said, the batted ball profile for Paredes. Can't talk today. Batted ball profile for Paredes there in Houston. His actual home runs the last three seasons, 19, 31, and 20. If he had played in Houston, it would have been 26 instead of 19, 28, and 21. So he would have gotten better in two of the 3 years by playing in Houston. I'm also kind of a believer in Cam Smith offensively, even if I don't think he gets at third base. But to me, this was... It sucks to lose a stud, and Kyle Tucker's absolutely a stud. But I do think this is a better return than they would have gotten at the deadline, and this is ultimately better than watching him walk at the end of the year for nothing but a comp pick.
No, I can definitely see that, and it's 100% a better return than they would have gotten at the deadline, because the Cubs are going to have him for a full year instead of just 2 months plus a potential maybe not postseason run. And it's I like Kyle Tucker on the Cubs, and I think that he makes that team a lot more dangerous on both sides of the ball, really. He's really a good fielder in the outfield. But I still think they could have done better, man. I don't know. I get what you're saying. I definitely get what you're saying. I still think that they could have done better for a guy of Kyle Tucker's caliber, especially as highly as the players that are free agency this year are being paid. Mm-hmm. The market is just overvalued right now, and it seems like the trade market might be undervalued to kind of counteract that.
I feel like the only way maybe you could have held him to get a better package would have been to wait for Anthony Santander and Pete Alonso to sign. Those feel like the last two really good power hitters on the market, right? Like guys who could hit 40 plus home runs. And once you get past them, I feel like you've got guys with power, guys that can do well. Teoscar Hernandez, Cas Pop, things like that. But they're the last two real, like really, really good power threats. And, you know, getting past them and getting to Kyle Tucker, who has never hit 40. He has 30, 29, and 23 the last 3 years, although he was hurt last year. But yeah, I mean, this does to me make the Cubs the favorite in the Central. You combine this with Devin Williams being traded by the Brewers, a very Brewer style thing to do, right? They move him a year before free agency, like they did with Corbin Burns. They learned the lesson from moving Josh Hader during the season, right? It feels like the Cubs now are the favorites because I think we talked about this. It's so hard to upgrade at in a lineup spot for the Cubs because everybody they have is like above average for the position, but nobody's a star. And this gives them a legit star. You have to hope that he enjoys his time in Chicago enough where he at least, if everything is equal, would come back to Chicago over going somewhere else. But I do think it's clear that he's going to get paid. And if you can move Bellinger, I feel like you have a little more financial certainty where maybe that can be being paid by the Cubs versus being paid by somebody else. And I just, even if they don't re-sign him, I still think in a vacuum as of right now, this is a good move for the Cubs because it would have been almost impossible to add a more impactful hitter to that lineup. And just there's no other way short of signing Juan Soto, and they weren't going to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And another good thing that plays in their favor, I looked it up a minute ago. Kyle Tucker is under the XL Sports Management, which is the same agency as Dansby Swanson. So that could also play in the Cubs' favor. It could have played in the Cubs' favor for the trade, even though that's not really up to the players as much, but it could definitely play in their favor as far as extending him or even re-signing him if he does test out free agency.
They do have a good relationship with Excel, given the Dansby deal. And obviously, Excel does know they're willing to spend money given the Dansby deal. So absolutely, there you go. Okay. Other moves we saw, Devin Williams gets traded, like I mentioned earlier, from the Brewers to the Yankees. And really interesting kind of thing here because it's a bunch of pieces, right? It's left-hand pitcher Nestor Cortes, who was moved to the bullpen for the postseason. He had some, I think it was like a forearm issue or an elbow issue during the season. infielder Caleb Durbin, who prospect had not come up yet, had played well in the Arizona Fall League. They acquired him from Atlanta a few years ago, and some cash considerations. I believe they covered some of the Cortez money. I can't think off the top of my head exactly how much that was. But just an interesting kind of move for the Yankees, where they're again acquiring a guy who has 1 year before free agency. But either way, adding a guy with a 1.25 ERA, 14 saves, because obviously the stress fractures in the back, he didn't appear until July 28th. Between him and Luke Weaver, you've got to feel a lot better about their ability to lock down the end of a game. Is there any concern that you just don't have any lefties at all in this pen? Like, do you have to do more if you're the Yankees? Do you keep making acquisitions for the bullpen? Or do you just kind of stay in pat with these two awesome guys at the back end and mix and match before that?
I think they definitely love to have a lefty for the bullpen, and maybe even with Carlos Rodon's struggles. I know he had a 3.96 ERA in 2024, but he's really struggled and been inconsistent throughout his career and injury prone. Maybe
you're paying him too much money. You can't move Nestor Cortez to the bullpen for that contract, can you?
How much is he making? But I think they do need to add at least one lefty, even if it is Carlos Rodon. But it seems like what they're doing with the addition of Max Fried and with the trade for Devin Williams, that they are gearing up on pitching. Go ahead if you have it.
$27.8 million for the next 4 years, 32 through 35 seasons.
Wow.
With a full no trade clause too.
Yeah, that's not a good contract for them. But it feels like what they're doing is loading up on pitching, because, I mean, yes, they've been in talks with the Cubs over the past few days for Cody Bellinger. But outside of that, their offense is Aaron Judge, who has 58 home runs. And, I mean, you don't have to explain who Aaron Judge is. And then Jason Dominguez, maybe, if he can live – if they put him in the lineup. Jash Chisholm, maybe, if he decides that he wants to be good that week. But it's just – they're loading up on pitching to make up for their really lack of offense is what it seems like to me.
Yeah. And the big thing for me is when you look at the pitching they've added, right? Like, yes, Devin Williams is great, but you look at adding Max Fried, they brought back Jonathan Loaisiga, you know, another round ball guy. It's going to all come down, as much as I want them to just like, yes, the pitching's important, the defense is going to matter too. And, you know, you've got, as of right now, you've got Ben Rice at first. You've got Jazz at second. Oswaldo Cabrera, who I love. I thought he was great as a fill-in outfielder in 2023. Oswaldo Cabrera at third. Like, you've got to fix the defense to properly get the right value out of a Max Fried, out of a Loaisiga, even out of a Devin Williams, who can allow batted balls from time to time. And, you know, we're going to get to it a little bit later in the show, but like, I feel like they're like adding, if you could add both Bellinger and Arenado, I feel like you're in a situation where you can leave Jazz at second. Bellinger is a plus defensive first baseman. I think in center, he's only above average at this point in his career. He's no longer a plus center fielder, but he's at least above average in center. He's a plus first baseman defensively. Arenado is still really good defensively at third. That would give you the really good infield defense you need to capitalize on this pitching. So if it's me, I'm adding another back end or another lefty in the pen. The dream is Tanner Scott, but he's going to be a lot of money. I don't think they probably have the money for three big money adds, Bellinger, Arenado, and Scott. I think you have to pick two. And so maybe you aim a tier lower than Scott. You go get another lefty for the pen, and then you focus on that infield defense, because while you can play Jazz at third, and they did that some down the stretch last year, he's really better at second. And so you get Arenado, you get Bellinger, which all comes down to the money with the Cubs from what we've heard. And then from there, you're absolutely set defensively to capitalize on the fact that your rotation is now Gerrit Cole, Max Fried, Carlos Rodon, Luis Gil, and sinker baller Marcus Stroman. And like, that's, it's these go hand in hand, and they can't just focus on the pitching because the defense isn't there to support it yet.
Yeah, I absolutely 100% agree. And it plays into that. What we talked about a week or two ago is that teams really need to start building their roster to their ballpark, and they've got the pitching side of that down to where they're trying
ground
to keep
ball
the
guys,
ball on
weak
the ground.
Contact guys who aren't going to give up stuff to the short porch.
Yeah. But now they need to get the defensive side of that down and really upgrade their infield defense over Ben Rice and Oswaldo Cabrera. And correct me if I'm wrong, Ben Rice, was that the guy that watched the ball roll down the first base line and bounce off the bag at first base and the runner, and it like scored a go-ahead run and extras in the middle of the season? It was a random game in the middle of the season.
If you're watching on YouTube and you remember this, let us know. I don't off the top of my head remember Ben Rice doing that, but it does feel like a very Yankees thing to let happen. That defense was not good last year. Some of that was Aaron Judge being miscast in center field. He's not a center fielder, but that defense was not good last year. And so that feels like a very Yankees thing to do.
I know it happened. I don't remember if it's Ben Rice
Converted catcher. He is. Okay. He does have in the minors. He had 121 games at catcher and he had 63 starts at first base. So he started off as a catcher and transitioned to first base. So he's still not as comfortable defensively probably as he could be at first, although he's getting better. But he didn't pick it up like Bryce Harper did.
Right. Not many people are as good at Bryce Harper at just existing, but they definitely have to, I agree with you, they have to improve their infield defense as well as adding a lefty to the bullpen. So if it were me, I'd probably go after Arenado and just stick with Ben Rice over Cody Bellinger and then go after Tanner Scott if it were me, just because third base is a much more premium defensive position than first base is, and then you can add that lefty to the bullpen at the same time and it'd be a like elite level lefty.
Yeah, it does feel like, I mean, even I still don't think one lefty is enough, but either way, you're in a situation where I feel like the lefty in the pen is more important than the first base upgrade, right? The power would be great at first base. Don't get me wrong. Aaron Judge hits enough power for 82 guys in baseball. So get the lefty in the pen, get the third base defense. Jazz will take care of second. And you at least, until injury strike, you're at least set up. I do want to move over to the Brewer side of this, though, because this is really interesting to me here, where they go out and they get Joey Ortiz from the Baltimore Orioles before last season. And because they have Willy Adames, they play Ortiz at third base. Bryce Terang is playing second base. They just got Caleb Durbin, who is a utility guy. He's played second. He's played third. He's played short. I think he's played some outfield too in his time. And so you're in a situation now of, how do you configure your infield? And I think the conversation is, unless you know Durbin's ready to be a major league starter, which he literally has never debuted, so I don't know if you know that yet, do you take a platinum glover in Bryce Terang and move him from second to short? Or do you kick Joey Ortiz in from third to short and try to replace him at third base with either a guy like Tyler Plack, or see if Durbin's ready, or see if maybe it's somebody like Oliver Dunn, who they got from your Phillies, I think at the end of 23. What's the best way for the Brewers to configure this infield?
I think that the way Fangraphs has it set up is probably their best bet, with Bryce Terang at second and Joey Ortiz in short. The only thing that I would do differently, and I'm going to get a lot of hate for this because this dude won a gold glove, but I would move Sal Frelick to the bench just because of the lack of production on offense, and have him as more of either a strong side platoon guy, which would not be moving him to the bench, I understand that, but having him as a platoon guy late in innings, or just a defensive replacement because of just the lack of offense that he's shown throughout his career. He's had over 600 plate appearances and he has a 665 career OPS plus. And I know that's not very many plate appearances, and he's only 24. He can improve, but Caleb Durbin's also about to be 25, so you kind of need to find out if he's going to be worth it or not. You could throw him in left field because he does have some time in left field in the minors, and if anything, his walk rate is much better than Sal Frelick's. And that is one thing. Even if Durbin's batting average of .287 in AAA in 2024 doesn't translate to the majors, his walk rate will translate to the majors, even if it's a slight decline, because plate discipline is the same across the board, regardless of what level you're at.
Yeah. For context on Sal here, 524 plate appearances. He batted .259 with a .335 slug and two home runs. He's a short king, diminutive guy, not a lot of power. He did steal 18 bags. He's not the primary base stealer here, but a .320 on base, it feels like if you're not really bringing any power dimension to speak of, you need to be better at getting on base than what he was. Kind of looking at some of the stats from last season, 1, 2, 3, 4, looks like five different everyday regulars had a better on base percentage than Sal Frelick, which is, again, if you're not hitting for power, you need to be amazing defensively, and you probably should be getting on base better than you are. I do agree that he's also young. I do think this is probably a make or break year on, is Sal Frelick an everyday regular or is he a platoon and or fourth outfielder? I do think this is the make or break. The real issue I have with him is he's played a lot of left field. And if you're using a guy in the outfield corners who has the offensive profile of a center fielder, it brings down the overall ceiling of your team. That left field is that one outfield position. I mean, we've seen Kyle Schwarber play left field. Like, it's the defense is great to have, but I think the power is more valuable from left field. And they either need to be more comfortable using him in center, which I do think Garrett Mitchell's a better center fielder. Makes sense you put Mitchell out there. They either need to be able to play him in center more, or they need to get somebody in that spot with power. Obviously, Christian Yelich is DHing most of the time now. He does rotate into left field when William Contreras needs a day out from behind the plate. Contreras got 679 plate appearances. He played almost every single day, yep, Moving between DH and left field. And so maybe there's a scenario where you can play Frelick in center when Yelich is in left. I've seen Frelick in right a bunch. Off the top of my head, I don't have how many times he's played center field in front of me, but it feels like he's in a really weird profile for a corner, and you either need him to hit play center or you need to not play him every single day because of the hit you're taking, especially when you look at last year. Joey Ortiz hit 11 home runs last year. He was playing third because he was really miscast as a third baseman. He's really a shortstop. And so you're in a situation where you have guys outside of type at a couple different premier power positions. And I think there was times last year when you saw the overall lack of power on that team really kind of interfere with their game, their week, their ceiling, whatever it may have been. And that's ultimately something when you're the Brewers and you're going to have to move on from studs a year before they hit free agency, like a Corbin Burns, like a Josh Hader, like a Devin Williams, you need to maximize your production at every other possible opportunity. And that's an area where I feel like the Brewers have been too willing to take speed and defense over power production. And I do think that's going to come back to bite them eventually.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And they do have the speed and the defense, and it's speed and defense that a lot of teams wish that they would have. But like you said, it's just there's a severe lack of power in that offense. They had last year, out of all of their regulars, they had four guys hit 20 or more home runs, including, and those were Jackson Chourio, William Contreras, Reese Hoskins, and Willie Adames. And they're talking about trading Reese Hoskins now. So
because he's got $18 million this year and then the year after. Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely an issue. Talk about trades. Your Phillies, I think a couple MLB GMs have a bone to pick with Dave Dombrowski. We've heard a couple different, Alec Bohm is apparently has been on the trade market all offseason, right? And I think there was a report earlier last week about they called him to try to, clear the air with him and let him know he's part of the team going forward and whatnot. But we've gotten a couple leaks about trade offers that Dave Dombrowski has made. If you go back to the trade deadline, he offered Aiden Miller and Justin Crawford, two prospects, for Garrett Crochet. Obviously was turned down there. And then so far this offseason, Alec Bohm and Justin Crawford to the Mariners for either George Kirby or Logan Gilbert, not even countered. They just kind of hung up on that. Alec Bohm and Nick Castellanos, who one of the worst defensive outfielders, I think it's StatCast history. I saw that stats recently, for Kyle Tucker, straight up. Like that was the deal for Kyle Tucker. And then Alec Bohm straight up for Mason Miller of the Athletics. What is worse, to be a GM that's not really made any significant deals, looking at you, Alex Anthopoulos, or be a GM that's tried to make deals, but the offers were so bad that they were leaked to the press and everybody made fun of you for it, like Dave Dombrowski? What's worse?
Now, I'm going to take Alex Anthopoulos' back here. He did sign Brian De La Cruz today, sir. So you
he also signed Brian De La Cruz to a league minimum non-guaranteed deal. So it's not like it's actually that risky.
No, I honestly would rather have a guy like Alex Anthopoulos that's just not trying to make deals than have a guy like Dave Dombrowski.
And for the record, he might be trying to make deals, but they're just not bad enough where they get leaked right. And made fun of.
Right.
I'm sure he's trying to make deals, but
it's, and this is another reason why this is just, it's just been a frustrating time in Philadelphia. Like, The GMs aren't the only ones that have a few choice words for Dave Dombrowski. Everybody in Philadelphia, anybody that follows the team has a few choice words for Dave Dombrowski, the front office. It's just, it has been two trade deadlines now that were bungled. It has been last offseason, and now it is this offseason to this point that has been bungled. The Phillies were set up perfectly to add Juan Soto to this team. They are willing to spend money. They have, and John Middleton, the controlling owner, wants to spend money to win a championship. And it's kind of like the Orioles thing where I guess the general manager just doesn't want to spend somebody else's money because the Phillies were not in on Juan Soto. And now you've got these other trades coming out. Alec Bohm and Nick Castellanos, that's it for Kyle Tucker. Like that. Why are you going to offer Justin Crawford in a trade for Garrett Crochet and not in a Tucker. Trade for Kyle Tucker,
yeah,
who is much more impactful? You don't need another pitcher in your starting rotation. And it's
got to get Taiwan Walker out of there somehow.
The new Patrick Corbin, but
there you go. Okay.
It doesn't make sense.
Real quick. I want to ask you this before we have to go. This roster, I think, is a little bit older than a lot of people realize. Looking at some of these guys, Kyle Schwarber's going to turn 32 soon. Trey Turner's 31. Bryce Harper's 32. Castellanos is almost 33. JT Realmuto's almost 34. We got a report on Sunday afternoon. They're looking at scaling back his games, giving him 2 days off a week versus one. And then in your rotation, Wheeler's almost 35. Nola's 32. Things like that. Is the Phillies window in danger of closing because some of the top prospects that you would have for reinforcements are just too far away? Aiden Miller is 20 years old. Justin Crawford, I think, is like 20 years old. A lot of these, like, is the window in danger of closing for the Phillies, or should these players be productive enough for another year or two where you've got one or two more runs in them before the band starts aging out or breaking up?
I said it a couple weeks ago, and I'll say it again. I still think they have to make a splash this offseason out of what is left. They have to pick up some remnants off the floor and do something this offseason if they want to be a World Series contender. I think they can still make the playoffs in 2025. Mm-hmm. After that is questionable, depending on what happens between now and then. I think they can still make the playoffs in 2025. I think they are the second place finisher in the National League East in 2025. But as far as being a World Series contender, they are going to have to make get a deal done with Nick Castellanos and Alec Bohm out the door and bring in a Teoscar Hernandez and Anthony Santander and or a Nolan Arenado, because Andrew Painter is going to be in the rotation at 2025 at some point. And other than that, you can live with Brandon Marsh, Johan Rojas. Kyle Schwarber's not going to really decline all that much. He's going to hit home runs and walk. That's fine. Trey Turner's already declined, and there's no getting rid of that deal. He's on the team for the rest of his career. Bryce Harper is still one of the best hitters in baseball, and especially with moving him to first base, that's not going to change. JT Romuto, you're going to get the decline. But if you can get an Anthony Santander, a Teoscar Hernandez, and Nolan Arenado or Alex Bregman, then – You can still be a World Series contender in 2025. After that, who knows?
To get Arenado, do you have to move Aiden Miller and Justin Crawford? Is that what the, or is this going to be you're going to try to get Bohm and or Castellanos in that deal to lessen and not have to trade both of those top prospects?
I think because the Cardinals are wanting to move Arenado to clear some space on their payroll because of their rebuild, I think that you can realistically send them a Castellanos or a Bohm, so that way they don't have to eat as much money of Arenado's deal, because both of those guys combined aren't making as much as Arenado. So, and if they are, it's negligible, and they're under team control far less than Arenado is, for a far shorter period than Arenado is.
There you go. This has been First Pitch for Monday, December 16th. If you're listening on audio, do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell so you know when we drop another episode. We'll be back tomorrow talking more about what's going on in Major League Baseball. And until then, this has been First Pitch.